We're going to do 10 questions in about 10 minutes. So the first question is, what is infinity?
I mean, a lot of people think that maybe to ask what is the finite is something that we understand, and infinity is the hard thing. But I think of these two questions as really two sides of the same coin, because to be infinite just means to be not finite. And so if you know what it means to be finite, then you also know what it means to be infinite.
Second question is, does infinity exist?
This question is super interesting, but maybe there's nothing special about asking whether infinity exists as opposed to asking whether any mathematical object exists. Do numbers exist? Does the number 7 exist? Or not even just about mathematical objects, but any kind of abstract object. Does beauty exist? It's the same kind of problem, right? I mean, beautiful things exist, but does beauty itself, the abstraction, exist? It's related maybe to a question. Suppose I have a copy of Ibsen's play, A Doll's House. You know, I'm reading the text and I tear the page. Well, have I torn a doll's house? I don't think so. It's just one instance of that abstract object. Or if I take the play on a motorcycle ride, then has the play gone on a motorcycle ride? I don't think so. But maybe it's similar with numbers and other abstract objects and infinity as well. It's an abstract object that exists. And so one needs to think about this existence in a different kind of way than concrete objects.
The third question is, what's the next most interesting thing after infinity?
So I think this question presupposes the idea that infinity is just one thing. So the right answer, of course, is after infinity is just more infinity. I mean, they never end. They just keep going forever. It's like saying, what's the next most interesting thing after a number or after the number? There isn't just one number. There's the next number after and then a number after that and so on. And they keep flowing forever, right? Cantor proved that for every infinite set, there's a larger infinity beyond it. And then a still larger one beyond that. And one can ask, well, how many infinities are there? And the answer is that there are more infinities than any one of them.
The fourth question is, if you could invite any philosopher or mathematician to dinner from the past or currently alive, who would you invite?
I'm drawn immediately to thinking of someone like Archimedes, such a prescient thinker of antiquity. Maybe I would want to talk with Cantor or Gödel or Bertrand Russell or even John Conway would be a lot of fun. But the more I think about something like this, it opens up what I find to be a cultural difference between mathematics and philosophy, in that in philosophy, we are always reading the original writer, the original thinker. But in mathematics, we almost never read the original thinker. We read the sort of updated version of their ideas presented, you know, in a contemporary way. And often they're better, the much improved version, that more connections are drawn and so on. And so if I was going to invite some great thinker, then maybe I want to turn the tables a bit and invite the mathematician of the future, like about 100 years from now, not the distant future, because I wouldn't be able to understand what they're talking about, close enough that they would know the answers of the right way to think about the problems that I'm thinking about now and explain to me the answers and give me some insight that way.
The fifth question is, do you find that there's beauty in mathematics?
Absolutely, there's beauty in mathematics. And we speak metaphorically also of elegance and an elegant argument. What does it mean exactly to talk about beauty in mathematics? I mean, it's not a kind of visual thing. It's something else. I would really like to hear the aesthetician's take on the concept of beauty and elegance in mathematics. It's something like, you know, logical simplicity combined with surprising power or something like that. I'm not quite sure exactly what it is, but mathematicians also use a kind of moral language. They talk about the morally right argument in a mathematical argument. It has nothing to do with right and wrong or ethics or anything like that. It has to do with choosing the method that's most appropriate for that concept or that engages with the right parts of the idea in a way. And I think the use of beauty and elegance in mathematics is similar. And I would really like to see a fuller philosophical account of what the meaning of beauty and elegance is in mathematics.
The sixth question is, what's your favorite infinity-related paradox?
Paradox is a word that we use when we're confused about something. But once we understand the idea, then we don't, it becomes a theorem instead. So for example, I mean, there's Russell's paradox, but I prefer to call it Russell's theorem. And when I teach those ideas, I call it Russell's theorem, that there's no set of all sets or so on. The general comprehension principle is false. I mean, there's Gödel's theorem. We don't talk about Gödel's paradox. And so I don't know if I really like calling something a paradox, like this is a thing that we can't understand. Rather, oftentimes we can understand if we just look deeper. Okay, but there, of course, it's just referring to a surprising result, and there's plenty of surprising results, like Goodstein's theorem or the Hydra.
The seventh question is, why are you so interested in infinity?
It's so easy to ask questions that almost immediately lead into very deep waters. The questions are easy and the answers become profound. And we find that we are able to answer these questions. So this is a situation where you know, you can ask the simple question and the answer is this long, long story. Interesting, fascinating story tying so many ideas together. And I just find this situation so amazing and wonderful. And so that's why I'm interested in those kinds of questions.
The eighth question is, how has your research changed the way that you see the world?
My view at bottom, though, is that it's the physical world and not the mathematical world that is deeply mysterious. The more physics you know, the more deeply mysterious physics becomes. I mean, you know, maybe you have some naive view about particles, you know, bumping and so on. And then as you look down, they're actually molecules. And then there's an atomic structure and quarks and so on. And then it becomes wave functions and Schrodinger's equation and so on. And the very nature of the existence becomes more and more mysterious the deeper you drill into it. But the opposite is what happens with mathematics. So when you're considering mathematical existence, then the longer and harder that you think about the foundations of mathematical ontology, I think the clearer things become. We don't have that same situation. And so so I want to view mathematics as part of the world, and what we're learning is the nature of the abstract existence for these kind of objects.
The ninth question is, what is important to you in life?
It reminds me of a certain fallacy of reason. You see on TV some expert, you know, they're expert in some topic, right? And the questioner asks them a question that's outside of that area of expertise. And they answer anyway, like full of confidence and expertise and so on. And I think there's a kind of error in that kind of behavior. I mean, I have a certain expertise in infinity and certain parts of mathematics and logic and so on. I know quite a lot about those things. And I don't really know anything about how to live a good life. That's not within my realm of knowledge. I'm a complete amateur about how to live the good life. But okay, I'm trying to add something interesting to the world by talking about infinity and these puzzles in infinite games and infinite computation and so on and logic. And I'm just trying to add something to the world that I find intellectually pleasurable and to share this joy of these things. And so that's part of what I do to live the good life.
The 10th question is, how will AI change mathematics or philosophy?
The current skills of AI in mathematics, I think, are not so impressive, actually. I mean, almost every time I've tried to use the AI thing, ChatGPT or someone, the paid versions and so on, to give me a proof, it gives me garbage instead. It gives me something that looks like a proof for someone who doesn't know anything, but it's not a proof. And I realized that, you know, part of it is how they work, right? Because at least in the current design, it's the AI programs, the chat programs are, they're trying to make something that fits the pattern of being proof, but that's not a correct way of reasoning, right? What you need to do to make an actual proof is to follow the laws of logic and so on. And if there isn't anything built in to the way that the AI is producing the arguments, then there's not very much reason to think that those laws of logic will be followed correctly. And in fact, they aren't. Okay, but maybe in the future, there's going to be better systems that do use the AI to generate ideas which are then controlled by a proof system or something. And that seems like an extremely promising way to proceed. And some people are already working on this kind of thing. And some results were announced recently that are quite exciting. So I'm hopeful for the future, but I'm not impressed by the current stuff. It's garbage, basically.